We'll take a break in about 5 minutes, okay? All right, this is why you will see, for instance, sometimes in India, it's preserved. This kind of structural insight is preserved. You'll see a triangle with a dot in the very center. The triangle is the accurate resonance of the dot. The triune God is, in its triunity, the invisible God. In other words, it's like a mathematical expression. You can write 6, but 6 can also be written 2 times 3. And as long as you use it 2 times 3 every time, it can be used in any kind of expression that's 6, any kind of operation, except that there are different kinds of operations available to you. So what is the purpose? The purpose of variation is to allow for more variation. Does variation have a purpose? Yes. To allow for more variation. Which means then that differentiation does not like to integrate, it likes to differentiate. And that the basic procedure of differentiation is always making the pairs apparent. So that the way that the mind works, the way that consciousness functions, is to take what is invisible in nature and make it visible. So consciousness is the invisible in nature made visible in the mind. So that the human mind can manifest the invisible in nature. In the ancient Gnostic material, in the Nag Hammadi, it's the book of the great book of the invisible spirit. If you look at your compendium of the Nag Hammadi material, that's the ancient way in which it was understood. That is to say, the Roman Hellenistic presentation of ancient Egyptian wisdom was that there is a great book written by the invisible spirit, and it's invisible in nature, but man in his mind manifests the writing visibly. That's one way that you can look at it. The whole object here is to understand, to position yourself in such a way that our first couple of months here were to establish this kind of a structure for ourselves. But not only do we have this 5-phase cycle, not only do we have this 5-part structure, but remember the initial stability was in a triad. So that triad, when it goes to its full manifestation, doesn't make 5, but makes 6. Makes another triangle. So we need a 6th volume, and for us, we're using the double helix as the 6th volume. So that just as the Tao of physics is a reverberation of the I Ching, and just as galaxies is a reverberation of origins, these books, the double helix is a reverberation of the portable Thoreau. Thoreau is natural in the sense of a man standing in the woods watching a snowstorm and being there with the trees all day and all night. And being there with them like a tree. But the double helix is man being able to stand on the molecular level of life and also be there all day and all night and survey what's going on. Now, I thought we would use the double helix because it's the most entertaining and wonderful and easy access to this. Actually, the genius who did this was not Crick and Watson. They were young whippersnappers. The genius who did this was Linus Pauling. And Linus Pauling is like a 20th century Thoreau. But Pauling's book on general chemistry, though it's reprinted by Dover, is about 1,000 pages, and it's just very, very difficult to get into. But it was Linus Pauling who was the molecular Thoreau in our time, who was able to stand there on those deep structural levels and just survey actually what happens. And it's Pauling who first had the deep penetrative insight that the structure of life is helical. He was almost verging on the double helix, but because he was seeing archetypally, he thought that it must be a triple helix. Because in terms of the archetype, a triple helix would have made sense. It's only later on, in terms of the depth of complementarity, that one sees it has to be a double helix. And Linus Pauling talked to Niels Bohr for even 5 minutes. He's the one that would have seen the double helix. But Pauling was using his own sheer, gutty magnificence to see. And when you see on that level, you see in the archetype. And the archetype says three will do. But you have to modify it a little bit by consciousness to understand that there's a mystery with the three. It's not so much that there are three, but the sense is that the one both is and is not, and that is the two. And that the third is the unity of the one that is and the one that is not together. So it's like one of those little puzzles that sailors used to entertain children with, of tying a very complex looking knot, and then when you pull the string, there's only one string there. There's no knot at all. It's only in the appearance of the convolution that it seems to be labyrinthian. But when you pull the structure of the labyrinth completely, it shows that there is only one that is there, ever. And that the convolutions were simply variations of the thing. There's a very, very deep insight. So it's important for us to see that nature is not a naive kind of collection of things, but is a very occult structure of truth. And that when we're basing ourselves on nature, if we will open our eyes to see nature with the depth of a Thoreau and a Pauling, and a depth of the I Ching and of a Richard Leakey, if we look with this kind of amplitude, then our actions will have a depth to them that they did not have before. What we do then will have a kind of an amperage to it. But the amperage will not be because we're trying to force what we do to be more powerful, but because we're adding what we don't do to what we do. It's like one time in a kitchen in San Francisco, one of my rock band friends, Steve Miller, was trying to get some hints from Chuck Berry about how to make a hit song and get the power of the music out there. And Chuck Berry finally said, "You know, the trouble with you white boys is you try to play every note." He said, "Miss a few. If your audience is with you, they'll fill it in. And that's where the music is." Our material. Let's take a look at Richard Leakey's origins for just a minute to solidify our understanding about something. I understand the paper-bound version no longer has the diagrams, but on page 14 and 15, there's a line chart of evolution. And on the previous page, there's also an earlier episode of this line chart. If one goes back to the beginning of this line chart, this time chart, there's only one line of occurrence. And that single line of occurrence happens from the origin of the planet all the way through to about 1.5 billion years ago, when life begins to occur on this planet. And when life begins to occur, there are not two lines, there's still just one line. So it's important to understand that life is a continuity. The organic quality of life is a continuity with the inorganic quality. In other words, it's a cultural error to presuppose that you can split nature into organic and inorganic. That's an intellectual error. And just because it's made almost universally and has been for several hundred years doesn't make it right. It's simply wrong. It's shoddy thinking. Perhaps one of the best mystical insights to this was Teilhard de Chardin, who I think some of you realize was exiled to the Gobi Desert and spent 40 years as a paleontologist out in the middle of the Gobi Desert. He said, rocks are not dead, they're simply pre-life. And when you can learn to see rocks as pre-life, you've come a long, long way. So that life is a continuity with the inorganic nature. It's the same ribbon of occurrence. So that when we come to speak of nature, if you want to speak archetypally of nature, nature has to do with existence. And life exists in exactly the same way that a rock exists. So that later on, if someone is going to say to you that experience is based on existence, you have a broad enough base for existence so that your experience can also be of an amplitude that will allow you to see the wholeness. Now, if you truncate existence right away by a false idea, your experience is already doomed to fail. And it doesn't matter how ingenious or clever or intelligent you are or gifted, or whatever, you're going to come up with a skewed and eventually ignorant view of yourself and others and experience and the whole shebang. There is a interesting aspect on 14 and 15 to this increasingly complex pattern. And that is, about 350 million years ago, we begin to see an occurrence that has not happened before. We see the first insects. And it's not until About 135 million years ago, that is to say, after almost a quarter of a billion years, let the first flowers occur. Now, it's a very peculiar thing. We would think that insects and flowers go together. But what goes together are birds and flowers. So that when you have symbols of the deep self, you have the rose and the lotus, you also have the dove and the eagle, but you don't have the insects. Because the deep self is archetypally accurate to the nth degree. In other words, the deep self is not ambiguous at all, ever, about anything. This is why the spirit spirituality is a science. It's exact to whatever degree of specification you need. You set the criteria. You grind as fine as you want. You can meet every criteria. There's nothing guessing. Mysticism is not based on ambiguity, but on ambidextrousness. It's a whole different issue. But along with the first flowers and the first birds come the first primates. In other words, there are like phases of existence that happen, and when a new phase comes into being, everything, like a circle that we were making on our arrangement of books, everything on that circle comes into manifestation at the same time. And on the circle that primates first occur are flowers and birds. We all occur together at the same time. That is to say, our deepest symbolic structural nature is that we are related to flowers and birds on our primate level before any further differentiation. Later on, we can see that there's an amazing kind of differentiation that happens in follow-through origins. The point is that there's a phase-form structure of occurrence. And in order to get the sequencing of enfoldment right, self-enfoldment, you have to have that full resonance of what this particular phase amounts to, what constitutes it. And then go to the next one and see that. And if you can see it in its full ordering, then self-unfoldment will have proceeded in a realistic way. Anything else is just speculation. Anything else, everything else is guesswork. And you're all here because you can see that you're not going to be able to live with yourselves on guesswork. Now, we've been using the Tao Te Ching, as a seventh book, so that we have not only a six-part structure, but we have something which allows us to see the six together as a whole. It's like we were saying during the break to someone, that six-part structure is like that benzene ring, which is characteristic of every molecule of life. Always, you can tell, it's always there someplace. And in fact, the whole development of chemistry out of alchemy is not due to throwing away alchemy, but due to symbolizing the archetypal image of alchemy into the benzene ring. Kukulé, who saw that, had a mystical dream of the serpent swallowing its tail the night before. The Ouroboros. And you could see that that was indeed, that was the structure of life. So that he could see, like Linus Pauling could see, that the helix was in fact the structure, a life structure. 350 years before Kukulé had seen that also. Human experience is able to resolve universal images. We're not talking about the mind, we're not talking about consciousness, we're not talking about intelligence. We're talking about just experience. in existence, we can resolve any structure to its image. That's the power of imagination. Now, what that image means is another issue. That's a different issue. To be able to interpret the image is another issue. But it is self-defeating to teach yourself sophisticated interpretation before you're free enough to have the images. In other words, children have to play before they think. And children who don't play enough are not able to think very well. You have to be free in your feeling before you can be free in your thought. And you can give the idea of freedom in all of its accuracy to somebody who is all bound up in their feeling and they can't make use of it. They have to grow into it. So when we're after self-unfoldment, we'd like to be as wholesome as we can be. We'd like our personalities to be wholesome. We have to pay attention to our feeling first, which means we have to be very generous about our experience. You don't have to go out and be some kind of a degenerate. That's not it. It's that the range of experience needs to be full. And the range of experience is full in the honesty of what you do comporting to the natural fullness. So the more that you are able to enlarge your response to an enlarged nature, so the indexing of your capacity to express deeper and deeper, more and more accurate structures of experience also progresses. In other words, there's such a thing as playing on the level of the gods. And on that level of divine play, the very structure of physical reality comes into view. And it isn't Maya so much on that level, but Lila. It's the dance of things. It's not the illusion, but it's the dance movement. A good magician, practicer of legerdemain can move the hand in such a staccato way that you can't even see its movements. But the movements are there. And if you know the movements, even though you can't see them, you know how it happened. You know, the coin didn't come out of the air, but it came out of the agility of the movements. So the unseen has a structure. And the largest structure of all is this five-phase energy cycle. And the simple way of doing it is just to use the human hand. This is the ancient way, the human hand. And it's like the movable aspect here is the Tao, the thumb. And the pointer is the unity. And the middle finger is where we are. And the ring finger is the triad. And the last little finger is the multiplicity. And if that energy cycle flows, the multiplicity is able to factor back into the Tao. And it operates not so much as a closed circle, but as a benzene ring of energy. So that whatever that energy does happens. It has efficaciousness. But to the extent that your multiplicity can't factor back into the Tao, there's a leak in the energy cycle, and what you do has a tendency to fade. And the more the leak, the less what you do has any effect whatsoever. So that you can get into a position where you know exactly what you need to do and it doesn't work. It doesn't ever work. Nothing happens. And one is ineffectual. Why? Because the energy cycles that you're working with are not coherent. Well, what's the right thing to do? Not to blister the other person with some kind of a harangue, but get yourself back together. Meaning specifically, find out why does that leak occur? Well, the multiplicity can only come because the structuring triad is defective, and that can only happen because something you are not doing. But very often, the printout is in the negative. It's not something that you're not doing, but something that you are doing, which is getting in the way of something which is then not done. Is that too fast? Is that too much like a magician? If you're busy putting this coffee cup in this book, you can't put this coffee cup on the table. This action is all that you can do at this existential moment. It means that other action didn't get done. And it may be the lack of that other action that eventually causes this leak and this energy flow. And so one has to become adept and do what you need to do in its sequence in order for it to have amperage to get done. Then everything begins to work. Not because you've learned to hold your hands in a more tense way and grit your teeth and ask for it in the nicest possible words, but because it is happening. And that has this kind of a quality. I guess the old way of talking is that one becomes a prow of being in the night of the unknown, and you leave awake even under those conditions. And that's what we're endeavoring to do. Here's how Lao Tzu puts it in the 42nd chapter of the Tao Te Ching. We're coming back to this, and notice that each time we come back, that we come back in a fuller way. The way gave birth to the one gave birth to the two gave birth to the three, and the three gave birth to the 10,000 things. 10,000 things carry yin on their backs and wrap their arms around yang. Through the blending of qi, they arrive at a state of harmony. The things that are hated by the whole world are to be orphaned, widowed, and have no grain. Yet kings and dukes take these as their names. Thus with all things, some are increased by taking away, while some are diminished by adding on. Therefore, what other men teach, I will also consider and then teach to others. Thus, the strong and violent do not come to a natural end. I will take this as the father of my studies. And then let's shift over here. Let's come to chapter 1. As for the way that can be spoken of is not the constant way. As for names, the name that can be named is not the constant name. The nameless is the beginning of the 10,000 things. That's the multiplicity. The named is the mother of the 10,000 things. That's the human. Therefore, those constantly without desires by this means will perceive its subtlety. Those constantly with desires by this means will see only that which they yearn for and seek. These two, desiring something and then getting exactly what you desire, notice that there's a little snag in here. You will get exactly what you're seeking. You may be deceiving yourself about what you're seeking, but you will get exactly what you're seeking. And if you're not seeking, then you will get exactly that, what cannot be sought. But notice what Lao Tzu does now. Notice how This is not the end of the first stanza. Now Lao Tzu backs away exactly one energy level from that statement and says, these two emerge together. Not a question of this or that. It's a question that those two always, always emerge together. Now, Friedrich Kappa doesn't understand that. And his book suffers to that extent that it's not Taoist. He can't be blamed. In a long list of people that he dedicates the book to, there's not a single Taoist in there either. These two together emerge. They have different names, yet they're called the same. That which is even more profound than the profound, the gateway of all subtleties. The gateway to all subtleties. On page 114 of the Tao of Physics, let's just read for a few minutes here. Let's start at the page, bottom of page 113. Logical reasoning was considered by the Taoist as part of the artificial world of man, together with social etiquette and moral standards. That's incidentally an anti-Confucian statement and has very little to do with Taoism. They were not interested in this world at all, but concentrated their attention fully on the observation of nature in order to discern the characteristics of the Tao. Now that's a non sequitur. That doesn't follow at all. You can earmark that for yourself to read and puzzle that over. Thus, and that's now the conclusion comes from the non sequitur. Thus, they developed an attitude which was essentially scientific. Oh. And only their deep mistrust in the analytic method prevented them from constructing proper scientific theories. That's untenable. Even before Joseph Campbell's work. That's just simply untenable. Nevertheless, now an emendation, or rather I should say, in his way of working, a correlation to the conclusion drawn from the non-sequitur. Nevertheless, the careful observation of nature combined with a strong mystical intuition, that's sugar. Nevertheless, the careful observation of nature combined with a strong mystical intuition led the Taoist sages to profound insights which are confirmed by modern scientific theories. Now, isn't that very interesting? Modern nuclear physics confirms these kinds of mystical insights that somehow they had. One of the most important insights, now comes the example. One of the most important insights of the Taoist was the realization that transformation and change are essential features of nature. Okay? A passage in the Chuang Tzu, written about 300 years after Lao Tzu. A passage in the Chuang Tzu shows clearly how the fundamental importance of change was discerned by observing the organic world. Right. The quotation is, in the transformation and growth of all things, every bud and feature has its proper form. In this, we have their gradual maturing and decay, the constant flow of transformation and change. Notice how precipitously accurate Chuang Tzu is. Now comes the punchline. The Taoist saw all changes in nature as manifestations of the dynamic interplay between the polar opposites yin and yang. And thus they came to believe that any pair of opposites constitutes a polar relationship where each of the two poles is dynamically linked to the other. For the Western mind, this idea of the implicit unity of all opposites is extremely difficult to accept. It seems most paradoxical to us that experiences and values which we have always believed to be contrary should be, after all, aspects of the same thing. It's only paradoxical as long as you see that the yang works and the yin gives, and that's how they work. Then it's paradoxical. So Lao Tzu says, those two always emerge together. They're a set. Most of you are not acquainted with set theory, but just take it from me that this is a very powerful kind of way of stating. The yin and the yang occur as a set. They always occur together in that way. Their functioning always functions as this set. They never function apart. But they function within a matrix which is not included in that set. The matrix that the set yin and yang function in is the Tao. Now the functioning of any kind of a set in a matrix like that, in order to compute its dynamic, one has to go to tensor algebra. And if you go to that, you can see that the tensor is the relationality of at least two vectors, and these vectors are the movement that can be plotted and seen, but the reality of the movement in and of itself is the relationship of the vectors in the tensor. And that's a whole different way of looking at it. Chinese Taoist thought on a feeling level worked that fine. In fact, when Chinese Taoism was allowed during the Tang Dynasty to not be politically subject to manipulation and killing, the Tang Chinese Taoists developed calculus. They developed calculus 800 years before the West. But they simply used it as mind training procedures in the monasteries and never put it into practice. I'm taking Capra to task here over this paragraph just so that you, first of all, that you're not baffled by authorities. None of these people know what they're doing. I don't know what I'm doing. You have to know what you're doing. So you can't queue up to experts. But you can, in your experience, use your own intuition on this level to pick out what's right for you to hear. And the only thing that you need from someone like me is to say, take it one step further and make an image of it. Don't just let it occur as a brilliant insight. Make an image of it. This is not reducing it down to a visualization technique. It's saying that the natural tendency will be for an image to occur. Let those images occur. So that at this stage, what we need to do is to have images of our deep self occur in the most natural way in our feelings. And that's why this mask assignment. And these masks that you're going to make, now let me shift over, close the Tao of physics. take time out for a short commercial, and come back with the next news report. Masks. We have come to the point to where the language that I could speak structurally has become so complex that you are hard-pressed to keep it in mind now. And I'm hard-pressed to be able to explain in an accurate enough way, and I'm having to go to higher mathematic metaphors to even engender an honest language. And the only way in which we could really follow this now is for me to bring a blackboard in and begin using the blackboard with equations and so forth. But that's not going to get us very far. What we need now is to work with masks. The image-making phase is here. Now this first mask is a mask of something from your diet, some food, something that you drink, something that you recognize that you habitually take in or characteristically take in. Someone one time made a mask of watermelon. Someone one time made a mask of rice. Someone made a mask of water. I think the mask of water was ingenious. It was a water jug with a face painted on it and was half filled, but you would have to hold that in front of you. I think, wasn't that you, Diane? Yeah. So the mask can be any kind of expression that you need to in order to get that image manifested. Now don't think up the image, but let it occur to you. In other words, if you want to use grapes, go and get some grapes and just start eating grapes until grapeness occurs to you, and let it have its face. It can happen. Try not to choose something like Alaskan crab, where it's going to cost you a lot of money. But if that's it, in other words, have the experience of the food generate the image. And the proviso of it being a mask is not the idea of a mask, but the experience of a mask. And you can make it as graphic as you need to in order to have it come out. Now try to work with this. Try in the next 2 weeks to make a mask of some foodstuff and bring what you have done in about 2 weeks. Just bring it along as far as you've gotten, because what we're after here is to outdistance our ability to conceive. Our minds are all far too quick. It's like our minds are like gunslingers that as soon as anything profound comes up, we shoot it down with trying to get the idea of what it is. And we kill everything that's alive. The mind is the slayer of the real, says the Bhagavad Gita, before it gets a chance to be. So holster your gun, or take the gun belt off, if you can do that. Don't let your ideational genius impair your ability to experience. That's what we need to do right now. This mask of a food or a drink, this mask will be an image that comes out of you. You know, in the days before the occult explosion, say 40 years ago, you used to go to these fried chicken restaurants out on some off-country roadhouse, and they would have on the table this magical crystal ball that you lift up, and on the bottom there would be this kind of a clear glass thing, and floating up out of the liquid would come your little fortune. And you could turn it up and turn it down and get a different one each time. The image of the mass should be like that. It should rise out of the mystery of that sphere of activity. You shouldn't think of it. It shouldn't be a brilliant idea. Well, I know what I'm going to do. That's wrong. You don't know what you're going to do. Or rather, you do know what you're going to do, but that's not what to do. Sidestep your own impetuous mind. Because what you're after is experience here, and not mentation. Well, for one thing, don't trust, on this level, don't trust your mentation, unless you're super yogi. If you're super yogi, then you can correct what I'm saying. Let the image occur out of your experience, so that the image is, as it were, a picture of your experience. Now notice that that mask will then legitimately occur on the ritual level. Shall we change our cassettes?